Could you tell us a little bit about the period after you returned with your father and after he passed away?
I want to talk about the end of 33 and beginning of 34. When we came, my brother and I came back at that time, we didn't know what we were going to do. What are you going to do when you come back? Right out of depression, things were real tight. So my brother said, well, I'm going to go back east and see what I can do in Chicago. And that's when he became affiliated with the Ford Motor Company. At that time they were planning to build a rubber tire factory in Shanghai, and he was supposed to be taking charge. But they were just, it was in a talking state at that time. And he was working at the Dearborn plant of Ford as a troubleshooter.
You stayed behind?
I stayed behind because my field was economics, and it was a very low ebb at that time as far as the economy was concerned. And so I just bided my time and prepared Dad at the same time at the store. Dad passed away in 36, so I took over things at the store then. As far as his holdings were concerned, there weren't any ranches anymore, anything of that nature.
Because he sold most of them off
during
the Depression?
Yeah. Right, right.
And so he was not involved, you were not engaged in the flower seed business?
No more. Strictly store business. And at that time it was on PRD and Safeway, and Piggly Wiggly came in. Supermarkets, this took all the play away from the neighborhood groceries.
So you had to change the stores?
I had to get rid of all the herbs, which my father was in quite heavily. And we had this army camp being built here in 1939 to 1941, preparation. What just happened to be that it's going to be, the war was very imminent. So this is bringing up to World War. Pearl Harbor Day, I had just gotten married. My brother was in Detroit. And he enlisted and went in as a first lieutenant.
Air Force?
No, what do you call it now? Where they maintain it all of them.
Imagery?
Anyway, that's part of the
Air Corps.
Ordnance. Uh-huh. Army Ordnance.
Well, before we get into how did you come to get married? How did you meet
your wife? Oh, yeah, my wife came out here on a visit with my brother George and his wife. George used to come back once in a while from his plane tours on the Arnhem Circuit and visit with Dad once a year, at which time he would give us his itinerary for the following year. He would book solid for 6 to 10 months out of the year, and he would give us a sheet where he'd be. Kind of make a visit with Dad, because Dad was getting along in years then. I hate one time he met my wife, and who was a good friend of his wife. Would you like to come and visit California? And he says, well, I have a brother who's a bachelor out there, and I want you to meet him. And so when she came out, he hit it off pretty well. Corresponded for a while and decided to get married.
Are you from the same type of area of China? Or
she's from, her folks are from Sun Wei. Come from a very large family. She would never tell me how big her family was until I visited with her relatives in Vancouver. There were 15 brothers and sisters. It was a huge family. Very nice people, very nice. They treated me like I was a king or something. The time I went up there. Yeah, very English as far as entertaining concerned. Very hospitable.
So, she came out here to live, or did you date her like other American
She went
kids?
Back, and we corresponded, and we visited for a while, and decided to get married. She liked the little town. At first she said, well, it's going to be 50-50 deal. We're going to live here for 6 months, and if for a few years, and then we're going to live the same number of years in the big city. This is the big city, too, so.
So you got married in what year then?
That was in 41.
41,
yeah,
and then you
and
got...
And the war broke out. The war broke out. World broke out. I wasn't inducted till the following year because I was above age.
Above age? Did you say?
Well, they were taking the young ones, and I had deferment. I had a business which held me a little stead. Physical imperatives kept me off until they needed men badly. At which time, meanwhile, I was running the store. There was an army camp out here, was very big then. 60,000 soldiers were in Camp San Luis. From here, they went overseas from here. It was the last stopping off point before they were shipped overseas. A lot of divisions, army divisions, went out of Camp San Luis in World War II.
Now, when you were inducted, did you find that there were other Chinese who were also inducted?
Oh,
especially
yes.
From this area?
Oh, there was only one other one, Richard Chong, the Chong family. And he's about 3 years older than I. And then his nephews, two other nephews, where they were inducted too. So about 5 or 6 from this town, the Chinese.
Did you went to the base here in St. Louis, or did they send
you
up to marriage?
No, I was inducted into Monterey.
Monterey?
And then from there they said, well, where are we going to send these different men? And they just grab a handful of these and ship them wherever they needed them. Or, like a cadre for a new division thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or wherever they needed filling in.
They had a language school up here in Monterey too, wasn't there?
That came in afterwards.
Afterwards?
After I went through all of it.
Now, you mentioned in earlier discussions that you went into special training because you had special knowledge of languages.
Yeah, right.
How did you come by some of that knowledge?
Well, I was inducted in the same, sent to Camp Beale in Marysville. It was just a brand new camp at that time. And they were was making, they were making the nucleus for this 13th Armored Division. I was the man who gave me my appointment, trying to fit me out for my particular qualification. He read over my information sheet, found out I had a lot of qualifications, language-wise and travel-wise. I had been in Orient for almost a year. Incidentally, I was traveling through China with the enemy Wong's brother, Jimmy. He left USC at the same time I left Berkeley. So we hit it off quite well there. We traveled through China together while my brother Fred stayed back in Canton taking care of my father. And my brother and I would shuttle back to Hong Kong too, which is 110 miles downstream from Canton. So we'd just take a little brief rest because I'm not taking care of my dad. Taking turns to get back to the army life. The different officers took a shine to me because I had my background and qualifications for being China. The war being in China, Burma, India, theater of war, why they saw that I could speak Chinese, Spanish, French, and English. And
how did you pick up the Spanish and French?
Well, okay, my father had all these ranches. In Depression time, I went into college in Depression time in the 30s. So what are you going to think of? Well, Dad had these ranches, and I was all my, most of my friends were Spanish speaking, so I didn't want to take. So I took up Spanish at college, and about 30 units of Spanish. And nothing else to do, I was a teacher. Then the French, I think, is mattering of French too. Brought my background, I alone learned a little French, a couple of years of French. And the Chinese was natural with us here, although we have an offshoot dialect, as you probably know. But one of the officers took a liking to me. After about 6 months at Camp Beale, after basic training so forth. He said, well, Lou, you know, you should have a better position than you have as a dispatch, motor pool dispatcher. So he said, well, you go take this course, this test coming up this week. It's to be sent to Stanford, a specialized training program. There'll be 30 men out of 300,000 short to take this course. And I think you can make it. So I went before a board of six generals and colonels. And they said, well, we could use you very handily. We're going to put you in this crash program where you'll be taking foreign language of your choice. And so I took up Chinese. I chose Chinese as if I ever come out of it alive, this conflict, why I could use it.
It's very useful. Sure. Were there other Chinese in that group?
Yes, there were. In fact, if you saw 60 Minutes program about 1 or 2 months ago, a man by the name of Sidney Rittenberg was being interviewed by these editors of 60 Minutes. And he was in my class. And I was selected, and when we broke up our group of 30 men, 15 went to ETO, European Theater of War, and the other 15 went to China-Burma Theater. I had asked to be shipped to China-Burma Theater because I knew more about it than Europe, but they decided to send me to Europe instead. So I ended up, they sent me to put me in the infantry, and our division was attached to General Patton's army. And our division was in training and maneuvers here at Camp Roberts here in Paso Robles during the summer there. And we were, our division was my division was the 89th Infantry Division. The French 71st Division was another division they had selected out of all the divisions to be sent to the jungle for jungle warfare in the South Pacific. The South Pacific now can't use army vehicles to cart around with, so cart around all our equipment with. So took all the vehicles away from our two divisions and trained us in jungle warfare, and we had to put everything on our back. But they and gave us some mules too.
And you still ended up going to Europe. Didn't have jungles.
So they sent us to Europe instead. Sidney Rittenberg, incidentally, was a Jewish boy from South Carolina. And he and I were, while they were trying to select 30 men, we were at Stanford. They're sitting around for 2 months, and he says, he was just anxious to get going. He says, well, so he asked the professor, what books are we going to use? Well, he says, the preface says, well, we're going to make our own book. We're going to make a syllabus just for this crash program. He said, well, we're going to use a dictionary, are we not? Yeah, so the professor, S.Y. Chen, Stanford, he taught English and Chinese. And he said, well, I'm going to use this 5,000-word dictionary, you know, for a basis. And he said, well, it's other work, rest of it, I'm going to have to make up special for you folks. Meanwhile, Rittenberg sat down and he learned his whole 5,000-word dictionary before we started reading and writing. He was a marvel. But he stayed back in China after the World War. He stayed there, married, and he had three children. He came back to L.A. Interviewed in L.A. I saw that in the newspapers. The only time I saw that. I sat down and get contact with that fellow. And I lost contact with him. And then this 60 Minute thing came through where he was being interviewed in Peking. And he was taking the cameraman and the reporter around interviewing different people in China. So I could see it.
I know that you were in a special unit, or you had some very special people you dealt with, and you made many friends. But what was the general attitude of some of the soldiers toward you and perhaps other Chinese, did you find that there were any tensions?
Well, ordinarily when you put in an army, you have a common goal, and you've got to depend upon the other fella, whether you hate him or not. Because you get a tight fix in the front line, he's going to be your buddy, and I'm going to be your buddy also. See? But there wasn't that many. They knew myself, my company had a high regard for me because they knew I was older, more experienced in life, and had my educational background. My Chinese end of it, which ordinarily would turn them off, was overshadowed by the fact that I could converse with almost any of those men on a par, if not a higher level. Because as you know, 15% of the men in the U.S. Army could not read or write at that time. In fact, I had to write letters home for a lot of those men, including officers, reports. I had to write for officers because I was quite a stickler for spelling. And these officers would come up with me with the letters that they had written, and I had to correct them before they could submit them.
Besides you and Fred, were other members of the family, other brothers in the service?
No, they were all older.
So they were not
all older. Now, right.
And then what happened after the war?
World War II, it took me about 45, I got on 45. VJ Day came off when I was in France, and then right after VE Day. The VE Day was made, first. That was first.
VJ Day was in August.
August.
September 6th. The 2nd was actually
August
the
2nd.
So you were away for about, what, 2 or 3 years?
3 years, yeah. Three years. At which time I closed up the store. My wife ran it for a while, see. But she couldn't handle it alone, so she locked it up for about 6 months, 9 months. In which time she visited with her sister in San Francisco, who had a Marco Polo restaurant in Cabaret.
Uh-huh.
So she went up there and worked with them. And after the war, I didn't know what to do. I was going to come back. And I had a job offer for the Bay Region. And I love to do pork picture framing, so I had a job offer from Gump's up there. And so I turned on after that. I came home and I got to meet my hometown friend again, and I decided to stay here. And,
you were pretty well welcomed by all the people.
Oh, we were
soldiers coming back home.
Right. Oh, yes. But as far as the soldiers not liking myself personally, the Chinese that I met in the army, they were pretty well liked, I'll tell you. There was one Chinese fellow from Pittsburgh, Lo Yi. He couldn't speak English, he couldn't write English, and they were, and at Camp Beale, they were trying to put him in position, you know, and give him a position somewhere along the line where he didn't have to use his English, see, to still be a soldier. And so, he couldn't get along there, and so the officers called me up one day and he said, well, we want you to come up and interpret for us. We don't know what's wrong with this man, but he will take orders. So I got to ask him, he was from our village area, you know, Toisan. And I said, his father was a laundryman, he worked in a laundry in Pittsburgh, but they inducted him. He got a wife and family in China. He said, I did not ask to be inducted. I did not ask to become a soldier. I said, well, when you're inducted, then you got to listen to Jin Fu, or you got to listen to the government, you know. Then you're ordered to do that. If you don't answer orders, you're subject to court-martial, you know, which is put up before a firing squad if you don't listen to orders. He said, well, he says, my money that I'm getting every month was $50 a month, see? And you get the sister's, pay for his family, which he proved that his family was in China, see? And at that time, you couldn't send money to China, see?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe it. He said, I found out I can't send my money to China, see? I says, well, if such be the case, I won't become a soldier. I said, no, you can't say that. You're in America. You got to do as the officers tell you, or else. He said, no, I won't become a soldier. He said, I'll just sit down like I have been doing all this past 8 months. He said, so the officers couldn't do anything with him, so they just discharged the gun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You couldn't remember his first name, could you?
No, I couldn't. I was just up there for that one day to interview the guy, I think. Translating.
So you ended up back in San Francisco after the war, then you said something about learning some picture framing?
Oh no, they wanted me, I applied for a job at Gumpson, picture framer,
yeah.
When I had nothing here in San Luis. So I said, well, we'll see what happens. I came back and started up the store again, and I found a lot of appeal here locally, so I continued the store and put in all Chinese goods at the time, because the anti-Japanese still, you know. In fact, when they, about 1947, the doctor came in, dentist came in to be Japanese dentist. He's from the Bay region. He said, I'd like to open up a practice around here. And he said, what do you think of it? I said, well, I think it's a big prime need for a dentist here. And he says, where are the Japanese and the Chinese, you know, bigger portion of them, are they living? Mostly in Royal Granny, they're farmers, you see, down that area. So he bought a place, opened up a practice in Pismo Beach. And by he did a beautiful thing. In fact, he told me, he used to come in periodically and tell me, you know, well, a little rough edges here and there, but we're doing very well. He turned out to be a very good doctor, and his daughter turned out to be a school teacher, so speaks well for his family, very well liked.
Well, Nisei?
Yeah, right, Nisei.
Speaking of the Japanese, what were the relations like between the Chinese and Japanese before the war? Were there any in this area, and were some of them taken away to the camps?
Yes, definitely that. I lost my mother when I was a year old. And we had Japanese friends. They were, well, they like to come and take over, raise us kids. Like my brother Fred, we were too small. We my brother and Fred and I, we've had Japanese mothers, we had Spanish mothers, Mexican mothers, an Englishman, real English woman for a mother, you know, taking care of it, and raising us. So we have a very cosmopolitan background, which I'm glad for. And I mean, everybody in this world should have that. We should be so lucky, you know? Should be less strife in this world today.
Well, it sure would. So there were other Japanese families.
Big families, yeah. They were very well liked. The father and the Japanese were very close. They were farmers too, you see.
And they started
99% were farmers.
And they started coming in at about what time? What were they?
I'd say about 1906, I think.
I see.
There are some records on recent booklet out on Japanese in this area.
Oh.
And it was very interesting. Yeah.
But you found that the Chinese and the Japanese got along fairly well.
Beautifully, yeah. Very beautifully. Yeah. A lot of rapport between the two.
And maybe the kids perhaps played together too. Maybe did they sometimes?
Yes. My young daughter and the Japanese family's daughter went to high school and Mills College together. That's just our family. But we've been always very close.
Even before the war?
Before the war, oh yeah, very. In fact, there used to be a Japanese family at the corner from our store. They had a grocery and a pool room. They had a picture prize, Japanese picture prize. Yeah, they had a son subsequently, and a son. When I was in Berkeley, he went to Meiji. When I left Berkeley, he went to Meiji, University of Tokyo. And there are two Japanese friends of mine in Berkeley. One was became a doctor, and the other became a tuna fish cannery owner. And the three of them met our boat when we took father to China back in the 1932. They met our boat in Yokohama. Okay. When we hit Yokohama there, the 31 the Japanese took over Shanghai. There's a lot of anti-Japanese feeling beginning then. And we wanted to get off the boat so badly because these three men were down there on the wharf waving to us, you know, waiting for us to get off to say hello to them. And we couldn't get off the boat then because the, my nephew, Wong Kaimun, was a big shopkeeper and the secretary of the Nationalist Party. And the Chinese on the boat gave an edict that no Chinese gets off the boat here in Japan. So I said, gee, I'll get, meet those fellows down below there on the wharf waving to me. How am I going to do it? Well, meanwhile, they had tours of the boat by these some Japanese students, you know, junior high school. And high school students came on board, and about a group of about 50 or 60, see. I said, you know what I'm going to do? My brother and I put our hat and coat off, hat and coats on, walked off the boat with these Japanese students, you see. We went and got to meet my friends there. They met us in Yokohama, and they hired a taxi cab and took us to Tokyo, showed us all around Tokyo, back again to the boat in time to come back, get back on board that night. Oh, my nephew didn't like that too well. God gave him a big wheel at the Nationalist Party.
Well, that's great.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah.
But that partly stems from the fact that you got along so well with the Japanese.
Oh, yeah.
Over here.
Yeah, no qualms at all. In fact, I used to date a lot of, not from over here, but college days.
And then I imagine that during the war, a lot of them were taken to the camps. Or
yes, a couple of big families here that were lots of money. And they were sent out to Manzanar, and Colorado, Michigan, Utah, particularly. Yeah.
Did some of them come back then afterwards?
Yes, quite a few of them came back, yeah. In fact, I have a friend over there. Over in Delano, you know, by Bakersfield there. Uh-huh. He was a pharmacist. And they put him in, imprisoned him in one of these camps on Manzanar. When the World War II was over, he came back and he dug up a sidewalk where he had buried $25,000, see?
He was still there?
And it came out on a newspaper, see? And so IRS got after the guy.
Yeah?
Yeah. Can you imagine a thing like that? He said, you had that put away for all along. He said, you got to pay your just, oh God, taxes on that money you had.
You mentioned a Japanese store earlier.
Yeah.
Was there a cluster of other Japanese businesses so that there was
not
like a little...
Not in San Luis. They were on Pismo and North Bandy. Those stores, that's all they did.
So they had a kind of a little settlement. We had a little China.
No settlement as such. No Japanese settlement.
I see.
Guadalupe. Uh-huh. Guadalupe, which is 50 miles, 40 miles from here.
Uh-huh.
That's the Japanese and migrant workers down there, you know, field workers.
Uh-huh.
You know, lettuce and cauliflower and celery from that area.
Well, now it's almost all Mexican, but do you think there was a lot of Japanese at that time, earlier?
Oh, yeah, quite a few there. Yeah, right. A lot of farmers. They had a lot of acreage there in Nipomo. Guadalupe, Nipomo, Santa Maria. And to get that up, you know.
Uh-huh.
Came back. Some of them got it back.
Some of them did get
it back. In fact, the one of the boys that met me in Yokohama was a former mayor of Guadalupe.
Getting closer.
He was born right here, so he was born right up the street from me.
Now, we're getting a little closer to current times, but, you know, Young has this big property here where he had some farming, orchard.
Right,
truck farm,
right where he's sitting now.
Right here. Did you work on this?
I was pretty young then.
You were
pretty young, very young. I was about 6 or 7 then, see. I didn't do much of that farm bit. But he had all kinds of workers at that time, way back now.
Uh-huh. So it wasn't until recently, though, I understand this house was not built until 1950?
About that. This is a lot of open territory, open land here. Lots available at that point.
So then did the family start subdividing some of the land?
Ours, we didn't have any land then. this Anholm. There was an Anholm family from Denmark, came over from Denmark, and he even saw the possibility that he bought up this whole area.
He bought it from your family?
No, another family.
But originally, still, this was all of your
part
land, all of your
truck
father's
farming.
Land?
Farming, yeah.
Lease land, right?
Lease land, right. There's been quite a creek coming through here. The Chong family, you know, in the restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah, he used to dam it up and catch fish in it, you know, swim in it.